Professor David Marples, says the Russian leadership has reached a point of no return. He's a distinguished professor of Russia and East European history at the University of Alberta, Canada. His recent books include The War in Ukraine's Donbass and Understanding Ukraine and Belarus. And he's with me now. Hello, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, nice to be here.
When you say Russia has reached the point of no return, you mean that Putin can do nothing but invade or risk humiliation?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, he's put himself in this position. He's created this crisis because, in my view, there's no threat to Russia from NATO, despite the fact that it's in an advanced position. So why bring this up again? About 18 years after the last border country joined NATO. I mean, it's this long period that's gone in between when Putin, who's been in power since 2000, has said nothing about that and suddenly brings it to the table now over Ukraine, possibly joining NATO, which in fact is not on the table either with NATO. There's no immediate prospect of Ukraine joining NATO. So this is something that Putin has created. Once before, he put about 140,000 troops on the border for a few days, and then they departed again. This time, they've been there now for some weeks. And at some point, Putin, with his massive ego and wanting to be at the world table and at the head of the discussions, cannot logically, to me, suddenly pull them all out again with nothing gained. I mean, something has to be achieved in order for him to save face and in order for him to say to the rest of Russians that this was worth doing. I mean, this world crisis was worth provoking because we have some substantial reward, we have substantial gain from doing that. That's where I said it's reached a point of no return.
Could appeasement not work in this instance? Could NATO not offer Putin something to make him believe he's had a gain?
Well, NATO has said that they're not going to be guided by who Russia wants to be a member, that membership of NATO is open to countries that want to join, and then it would be decided by the NATO members whether they agreed to that. Therefore, they said no to this blanket demand that Ukraine cannot be a member of NATO. And quite rightly, in my view, there was no other possible response to that question or that demand. There are talks taking place now, and there are different possibilities over where these talks could go. I mean, for example, there's been a suggestion from the French leader Macron that we could go back to the 2015 Minsk Accords that provided an armistice to the war in Donbass. But these accords were not very satisfactory to Ukraine, and because they basically negotiated from a position of just being defeated in a major battle. And from the Russian perspective, they would have some advantages there, but it's hard to know what Russia wants in the Donbass. They have not been willing to annex those regions. They prefer perhaps now to give out Russian passports, but there's never been any formal recognition of those breakaway regions by Moscow.
Why not, do you think?
There have to be because I think that Russia's goal is to have these regions part of Ukraine, but with full autonomy. And Russia could then put pressure on Ukraine through these regions, which traditionally have voted for pro-Russian politicians in Ukrainian presidential elections, and even had a pro-Russian president between 2010 and 2014, who was removed from office by mass protests in the Maidan 8 years ago, which kind of started off all this conflict between Ukraine and Russia. So that's why I think Putin's preferred solution is that the Donbass regions have their own governments with considerable autonomy over their own resources and decision-making, which would only weaken Ukraine. I mean, ultimately, the goal is to weaken Ukraine and to make sure that the government of Ukraine falls and is replaced by a more pro-Russian variant.
Why, if the Donbass area had autonomy, why would that necessarily weaken Ukraine? Why wouldn't Ukraine say, OK, well, you go that way, we'll go this way, end of?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think I mean, it could happen. Theoretically, yeah, this could happen, that you could say you're going to have autonomy. It would mean recognizing the leaders of the separatist republics as bona fide leaders, even though they were overtly appointed by Russians in meetings inside Russia before they took office. And they are clearly devoted to closer relations with Russia and to following Russian policy. And I think the feeling in Ukraine is that if you give them autonomy, what you're actually saying is that these are Russian sort of a fifth column, if you like, inside Ukraine. And this would not allow Ukraine to develop pro-European or pro-NATO principles in the parliament. And keep in mind that the opposition bloc in the Ukrainian parliament today is quite powerful. It's either the second or third largest bloc, according to opinion polls. And these percentages of factions in the parliament are very close. We're talking about 14%, 13%, 12%. The bloc has a substantial influence in the parliament. One of the issues has been, of course, that Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, has taken steps to reduce the authority of pro-Russian forces in Ukraine by blocking some media and putting the leading pro-Russian official in Ukraine under house arrest, which has, of course, incensed Putin. So there are these forces inside Ukraine, as well as in the breakaway regions of Ukraine, which have supported Russian demands in the past. And I think that, you know, this is one thing that Putin is banking on, that he has sufficient support within Ukraine to make a change of government viable, or at least to present some kind of democratic facade, if Ukraine agrees to make changes in the first place, that is.
I can't help thinking that if the Donbass area had autonomy, that would be a buffer zone for Ukraine.
Yes.
And it could get on with its business. But you obviously think that Russia wouldn't be satisfied with that?
Well, I think you have to consider what's happened in the past 8 years. I mean, Russia has openly annexed Crimea from Ukraine against international law and against its past agreements not to violate the borders of Ukraine. And this, there's no prospect of Crimea rejoining Ukraine. It's tried to do the same in the Donbass. It tried to do the same in cities like Kharkiv and what was then called Dnipropetrovsk. Today it's called Dnipro, another major city on the Dnieper River, and failed with those. But he did succeed in getting changes of government in Donetsk and Luhansk regions, and including the two major cities. That's the only base, aside from Crimea, that Putin has got in Ukraine. And clearly, the other parts of the Donbass, the two regions that are not part of the separatist enclaves, want to stay in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And I suspect that if there was a... excuse my dog.
That's all right,
suspect that if there was a referendum, even in the occupied zones, if there was a free vote on where the people there wanted to be, they'd probably say that they wanted to be in Ukraine. You know, there's no overt pro-Russian sentiment wanting a Russian occupation of anywhere in Ukraine. Even in Crimea, there wasn't. So this is imposed from the outside. And this is why it's so dangerous for Ukraine to allow a buffer zone, as you call it, and I think that's correct, to allow a buffer zone in the east, in such a dangerous region, and without any secure hold on what used to be the eastern border of Ukraine. Because one of the stipulations of the Minsk Accords was that Ukraine would regain control over its eastern border. And that clearly has not happened. That border is simply open for forces to move in. And this is why I think it's a dangerous border in the situation we have today.
You stuck your neck out, Professor, and said that there will be another attack on Ukraine by Russia in the next few weeks. If that is going to happen, where will that attack take place, do you think?
I would say the most likely place is the eastern region, simply because the separatist regimes are already under Russian control and would not offer any kind of resistance. So the places like Donetsk and Luhansk would presumably welcome Russian troops without any resistance to that. And Mariupol, you mentioned Mariupol in the earlier segment today, would be a likely target simply because it's a major port and it would provide a gateway between the separatist regions of the Donbass and Crimea, which has already been annexed by Russia. But during the exercises that started in Belarus yesterday, I took a look at where the exercises or where the troops and weapons are being placed. And notably, many of the locations are not part of the areas where the Ministry of Defense of Belarus suggested the exercises were going to take place. He suggested mainly in the far west and southwest of Belarus in the Brest region. But in fact, in many areas just north of the border with Ukraine, there are now large contingents of troops and weapons. And people living in those villages have been told either to leave or not come out for the next 9 days because it'll be very dangerous for them to do so. Why are they there? I mean, this is the former Chernobyl zone of Belarus, if you like, if that puts it into better context. It's the closest location to the city of Kiev on Belarusian territory. So that suggests to me that there is a potential for some kind of movement from the north if there's a need for it, or if there's an attack on the Ukrainian capital.
All right, we watch and wait. It's very good to talk to you. We will revisit the situation. I'm sure Professor David Marples is a professor of Russian and East European history at the University of Alberta in Canada.